Today I kind of want to address the world in which we live. I would say society in general, most people are not fully aware of the realities of the day. Jesus Christ gave his disciples two notable prophecies. They were actually things that were previously written, but he emphasized them because they're important. One of them that he mentioned was the abomination of desolation, which tells us something that we wouldn't otherwise have realized, that Daniel 11 has relevance to the modern era. In fact, the end of time, or the end of this age at least. I'm not going to talk about that one so much. We've covered that on other occasions, maybe again in the future. But the other one that he brought out was one that we read of in Luke 17 and Matthew 24. And we can read the Luke 17 version here, where he explained that there was a time to come. If I can find Luke. That describes the world in which we are going to be living. Luke 17, verses 26 and 7. Where he said, "As it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be also in the days of the Son of Man." In other words, the time to come was going to be much like it was before the flood. They did eat, they drank, they married wives, they gave their children in marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all. In Matthew 24, it explains that they didn't see it coming. They didn't know until it happened. Genesis 6:5 sort of describes those days and what they were like. It says very little, but it also says a lot. Genesis 6, verse 5. "And God saw that the wickedness of man was great upon the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually." The product of human consciousness in those days was oriented to and was continually producing evil itself. Christ made a direct comparison to that age, back in that time, to what it will be like in the world of our time. Because we live in a world that also is only evil continually. It seems that every activity of man is affected in some way. But that's not how most people see it. Those that lived before the flood never saw it was coming. They were lulled into a state of sleep with their normal daily routines. The thing of it is, we are not as aware of the all-pervasiveness of that evil of our time. Romans 3:12 tells us, and I'll just read it here, "They are all gone out of the way. They are together become unprofitable. There is none that does good. No, not one." That kind of tells us the times in which we live are not unique. The same thing has been going on throughout the age of man. But Christ's mention of it illustrates the fact that it was going to become particularly pervasive as time carried on. Isaiah 5:20 describes situations where good has become evil, and evil is defined as good. Isaiah 5:20 through 23. Where's the alarm? Where's the outrage? Where do we look for moral guidance in a society like we live? The general population is completely oblivious. They're destroyed on account of ignorance. Matthew 24:39. We might want to read that, Matthew 24. This is where he points out the fact that the people didn't know what was coming until it came. And he knew not, and they knew not until the flood came and took them all away. So shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. Christ's appearing is going to have a similar effect as far as dramatically changing the world order, as did the flood in Noah's time. We're pretty much lulled into a state of sleep, if I guess we could call it. We're deceived as to the true state of society. We live our lives. We're not really paying attention to, perhaps to the degree that we should. But it happens. Well, of course, we have to live our lives, yes. But we also need to be aware of what's going on. I suppose none of this would matter if there weren't a God, and if God didn't have righteous standards, but he does. And he's concerned. He wants things to be right, but they'll never be right so long as mankind is running the show. God gave us free moral agency. But he expects us to use it properly. It's a matter of how we use it. It's important that we have a sense for why it matters. Proverbs 14 is insightful. Let's go to Proverbs 14. Verses 15 and 16. The simple-minded person believes every word, but the prudent man looks well to his going. In other words, he's watching what he's doing and where things are going. A wise man fears and departs from evil, but the fool rages and is confident. He that is soon angry deals foolishly, and a man of wicked devices is hated. The simple inherit folly, but the prudent are crowned with knowledge. It kind of tells us what humanity is like, but it's important to be prudent and not a fool. We have in our world a small group of elites who think they have a right to control the world on account of their bloodlines. We'll come to that a little later, but on account of their bloodlines or on account of their massive wealth. They want to reduce the world's population. You might have heard about that, you might not have. But they think the world's population is getting too great. And there are problems with population, that's for sure. But how they go about it is a different matter entirely. They think they know what's right for humanity. That's a moral issue with them. Is it in line with what God wants? That's what we need to determine. Events of recent time have shown very graphically what they can get away with. The pandemic as we know it has allowed us to see what kind of people, some say sheeple, we are. And this won't be the last. We've shown them how easily we can be made sheeple. They've discovered what they can get away with and what we'll go along with. Don't think it's going to be over. There is a direction, there is a drift that's coming on the whole world, not just here. And it's going to set up events that are going to bring us to the end of this age. The Apostle Paul tells us in Ephesians 5:16 that we are to redeem the time. What's he saying? We're to redeem the time because time is precious. It needs to be used properly. We're living in an age where there's a contrast between darkness and light. When there isn't light, and Christ told us that we are to be the light of the world, when there isn't light, what is left? You see, darkness fills every space where there is no light. Darkness has no energy. It has no wavelength. It's just there. It's natural. Light needs to be projected into the scene because light is an energy source. Nobody has to bring darkness in. It's there to begin with. But light has to have a power source. Darkness was the original state of the earth. Genesis 1 tells us that. It took energy to introduce and sustain light, the first thing of creation. So let's look at all of this with divine perspective. How is the world evil? There's that old song, or psalm, or poem rather. How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. Did you ever hear that one? Well, how is the world evil? Let us count the ways. We might tend to look at evil as a minor component, but what I want to explain is that it pervades virtually every activity of man. Most obvious, the media. Do we get the truth, the real, deep, unadulterated truth from the media? On the internet, there's a continuous stream of falsehoods. You never know what you're reading, whether it's true or not. Is it some crazy conspiracy theory, or is it a fact? How do you know? Most of the media is agenda-driven. They have something they want to achieve. Is it right in every case? If the truth is out there, it's pretty much resisted or hidden, if it comes to light at all. And then we got the political world. We have one party opposing another. You have the left socialists, you got the ultra-right. We have the political correct movement where you can't speak the truth to some issues. We give sanctuary to evil and persecute the righteous. How about Hollywood? Hollywood produces a continuous stream of false depictions, perversions, extremes of violence, expressions of hatred, demonic themes, pours out of Hollywood all the time. Some of the latest stuff from Hollywood, I couldn't believe it. What's their point? Nothing but destruction and rage. The world loves it. The world's eating it up. That's why they're producing it. But they've given the world the appetite to begin with. The political correctness movement, where they deny the obvious, they misrepresent the facts, they promote or discourage racism? Are those things evil or are they good? The academic world, oh boy, where they teach false theories, they teach unreal idealism, they're very ideological, they impress on students false moralities. We could name a number of those. Science community. Does the science always produce the truth? Or do they work off of false and faulty premises? Take, for example, evolution, or strata interpretations, or climate effects. Do we ever get the truth on all of those subjects? Religious world. Ah, that should be safe. No, the religious world is cultish. We learn to hold each other in a bad regard. We have orthodoxy where you must believe what they teach, whether it's true or not. The religious world is exclusivist. That's not what Christ taught. They become withdrawn into themselves. They're self-focused and obsessed. They're divisive. Do we see a religious world where unity is even possible? Or are they the biggest barrier to it? Look within our own genre. Then we have substance abusers, hooked on drugs, alcohol, adrenaline rush activities, bodybuilding drugs, all of that stuff. Abusers of their own physical bodies. Should be obvious that witchcraft and occult are evil. They are overtly satanic. Make no pretense about it. And the thing about it is, the occultish movement involves high-level people that it would shock some of us to know. Just look at the Epstein situation. There's a lot to be revealed there. We tend to think of that as more of a sexual genre, but the occult is mixed in with that as well. That hopefully will come out. Sexual culturalism, there's another one. Our world tends to respond extremely only to certain offenses. Not all. And we have human trafficking. We have the abortion movement. Evil or good? Gender misogyny. People have trouble identifying what they are anymore. Transgenderism, cross-dressing, homosexuality. All of that is becoming more prevalent in our society. The legal profession, oh, that should be good and right, isn't it? No, the legal profession is oriented to winning, not necessarily seeking the truth. The legal profession operates under a huge double standard. The judicial system, at least, that should back up the legal profession. No, they operate under the same double standard. They're oriented to protect the criminals and not take seriously the victims' needs. And they offer a selective leniency. I write to a fellow who's in prison for being falsely accused of touching his granddaughter. He got a life sentence out of that, practically. And yet, heinous examples in other cases, the offender's lucky to get a year and a lot of times probation. What's with that? Medical world, that should be safe. No. The medical world, they practice unnatural experimentation. Biological intermingling, that's been going on since the Nazi era. They promote false remedies or false cures rather than taking into account how the body works naturally. In our latest situation, has anybody talked about how to build your immunity to all of this? It's not even considered. It's not even considered. And it hasn't been. That's not how the medical world operates. Then we have the military and those that run the military. No matter where you are in the world, any major country has what they call a bioweapons lab. We have them. We know of the one in China, the big one. Then there's all kinds of secret operations that the military carries out that we never even hear about to interfere with other governments. We have the issue of governmental coercion. There's sinister actions. There's things going on behind the scenes that look to influence society. They cover their political agendas. They force upon us immoral agendas. That's how the government works. So as we can see, the field of evil in the world is greater than we could ever imagine. And that's just here in the best country on earth. What's it like in these evil regimes that run other countries? Can you imagine what it must be like where we don't have the controls, or we used to have, or we're supposed to have, the controls that we do here? Romans chapter 1 is very insightful. And we should read that because it says things that can be said no better anywhere else. Romans chapter 1, beginning in verse 18. And it kind of tells us where God stands on all this. He says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness." There are people who oppose and despise the truth. "Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them." They've got the intellect where they ought to be able to see this. "For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen." God's physical creation illustrates many, many spiritual things. "For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even to the extent of his eternal power and Godhead. So that they are without excuse, because when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they exhibited themselves as fools, and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like unto corruptible man, and to birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts." Look where this is going. "Wherefore God gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie and worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. For this cause..." Here's why. Here's why the world is like it is. "For this cause God gave them up to vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another, men with men working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error which was appropriate. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind See where the problem is? To do those things which are not convenient. Being filled with all unrighteousness and fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, deceitful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. There's people that are doing these things, and there's people that are going along with it. Are there any people who are oriented to godly standards anymore? Hopefully there are. Unfortunately, it's just a few. We have a pervasive infestation of false information and intentions in every aspect of human endeavor. Truth, honesty, character, righteousness. Who defines what that is anymore? We're given a whole stream of false narratives. Political agendas are considered moral issues, many of them miles away from any real morality. We've substituted political action for personal morality. Oh, we'll save the planet, but we won't save our own souls. A sound mind is what it is that we need to see as a general societal motivator. 2 Timothy 1:17. Sound-mindedness is all important. Where do we find that? We need to renew our ways of thinking on a broad scale. Ephesians 4:23 tells us that we need to be renewed in the spirit of our minds. And there's only one real effective way to do that, and that is through the power of God's Spirit working in us. Proverbs 20, verse 15 tells us that a righteous person is a real but rare treasure. The lips of knowledge are precious as jewels. In Matthew 10, Jesus tells us we should be wise as serpents, but harmless as doves. Is the world like that? Even the religious world? Wise as serpents. To be that way, we have to know what's going on. And we have to be able to evaluate what's going on in a correct light. The 19th century French writer Alexandre Dumas said it best. He said, "The difference between genius and stupidity is genius has its limits." In other words, stupidity does not. Right on. What's going on in the world? Is God working behind the scenes? Is Satan working behind the scenes? In Daniel 10, we read of an instance where God was held up for like 3 weeks battling with the prince of Persia. And he had to get assistance from one of the highest ranking archangels so that he could come to Daniel and answer his request. But it tells us there is a spirit force working in the political structure of the world. The current political developments will lead to the prophesied end time crisis. This world is on a course, and it's going to an end that is predictable to those who know God's plan. The preeminent preacher from the mid to late 1800s, Charles Spurgeon, you might have heard of him. His view was that discernment is not knowing the difference between right and wrong. It's the difference between knowing right from almost right. Because there's so much of that. Accepting something that's almost right can be morally and culturally catastrophic. As it says in Galatians 5:9, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. We can be right on a great number of things, but if we let in something that's polluted, something that's almost right but not really right, it can affect the whole structure of our thinking. Have we ever connected the activity of de-leavening with clearing our minds? I think we do. 1 Corinthians 5, verses 7 and 8 talk about the de-leavening that we are to go through in the spring holy days. And we equate that with coming out of Egypt. Rightly so. But do we have a correct mental definition of what exactly Egypt is? And that goes back to these days of Noah. The conditions in Noah's time were such that the entire human race had to be exterminated. All flesh had become corrupted. In Noah's time, there was no hope for reversing the conditions, even among the few. The world had become that polluted with evil. There was no redeeming quality in that generation. You couldn't justify saving anything of it. There was no means of redemption, at least, either. Not until the time of Abraham, who became the father of the redeemed. They had no idea what was coming until it hit. Is that true of our time as well? For the most part, it probably is. But hopefully we know what's coming. Our nature determines our destiny. Whether it's the human nature or our reoriented nature. Let's look at John chapter 3, 17 to 19. John 3, 17, for God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. He that believes on him is not condemned, but he that believeth not is condemned already. That's his natural state to begin with. Because he has not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. And this is the condemnation, that light is come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. Second Peter chapter 2 talks about angels that sinned. First Peter 3 shows how that they too suffered the consequences of their decisions. We in this so-called enlightened country have legalized perversions. Not just legally permitted acts, but it's become enforced even. Let me tell you how that works. A society will condemn a particular action. The consensus among most people is to condemn something. And then as time goes on, we begin to overlook and not condemn so strenuously. And then it drifts into a permissive stance. We begin to permit it. And then with enough time and enough political action, we legalize that formerly condemned activity. And then we go on, once legalized, to promote it. That legalized community will promote what has been legalized. And then they celebrate it. And then the final step, they go on to persecute those people who otherwise would have condemned the action. This is how that corrupts society. And where have we ever seen that happen? This is how evil gains the upper hand. And once it happens, what's the likelihood that society will repent? Or is it to that point where you can't justify redeeming the people who have become so affected? What's interesting to notice that it's the evil agendas, they're the ones where we see exhibiting all the motivational energy. The people, for the most part, may oppose these, but they're staying silent. The minority has all the energy to push their agenda. They're the movers and shakers. It's a case where the minority overwhelms the majority. And with political and media and academic help. We see it happening all around us. Do we understand it? Societal insanity is not necessarily all evil of and by itself, but it provides the environment for it. I mentioned earlier about the elites in our society who want the population reduced. They want to cull the riffraff. The unfortunate thing is some of the best of people are among the riffraff, while many worst examples of humanity are among the elites. And you'll understand that statement better when you realize what they're involved with. I heard a message from a retired but long-time ex-CIA member. And he identified the real evil ones. And I was shocked in what he said. But he says, these are the real evil people in our world. He said, Freemasonry, Mossad, Zionists, and the royal families of Europe. Think about the implications of that. Because what do we know? That it's the royal families of Europe that are going to get together, 10 of them, and form the beast power. They're evil to the core. We don't realize it. And Mossad, most people don't even know who they are. Mossad has tentacles into the world like we wouldn't believe. Epstein was connected with Mossad. He bought his multi-million dollar mansion in Manhattan from Mossad for a dollar. Does that tell you something? His daughter, who worked with Epstein, was the daughter of a Mossad member. It was probably Mossad who killed him on his yacht. He was a member of the British Parliament at one time. And then he went on to become a media mogul. I'm getting a little off track here, but I just want to point out the fact that the tentacles of that is buried into our culture, our political structure, more than we ever realize. But the royal families of Europe are a gene pool from which the end time beast power will emerge. Maxwell was deep in it, so was his daughter. And she might be the prime mover, where Epstein himself was just the puppet. We'll know in time. But here's the thing. And I want to mention this. The book of Daniel, chapter 11, talks about those who forsake the covenant. It mentions them three times. Are the Mossad the candidates to be those people? Because it says what they're going to do, and it's shocking. We'll cover that another time. There's going to come a time when those people who think, who kill us, or who kill God's people, are doing a good service for humanity's greater good. John 16:2 talks about that. We need to be thinking in a broader sphere of awareness. We need to be exercising disciplined thinking. We have to weigh what's true and what isn't. And we need God's perspective to be able to do that. The computer media has spread so many questionable ideas that nobody really knows what's going on. People rationalize sin as though it's not all that bad. It's acceptable, it's good even. No. Searching for the truth is easy. Finding it is somewhat harder. But oftentimes accepting it is the most difficult. Because the truth isn't always what we think it is or what we think it should be. The old quote says, "There's nobody so blind as those who will not see." That may be proved to be the greater situation in our society today. 2 Timothy 2:7 talks about the mystery of iniquity. The mystery of iniquity. Now that shows that it was working in his time, but the way Paul spoke of it tells us that he was talking about a higher degree of intensity of that occurring in our times. There are the depths of sin that can't be fathomed. What we call unfathomable lawlessness. And there certainly is plenty of that. Truth and so-called justice are manipulated by the media. They're manipulated by the legal system. Our educational system as it exists right now is a tear in society. And we know from the example of the wheat and tares what that means. We should consider that parable because the educational system is, or it acts like, a tear. To them, there's no real history. There's no real rightness. The lessons of experience are disregarded as though they're non-consequential. They hate anything truly free and right. What are they thinking? It's the core of their consciousness. You know, we issue arguments of right or wrong. Let's understand something about the current movement. People who established this nation gave their lives for what they believed in. They shed their blood in support of what they were trying to achieve. Not the current mob. They wouldn't give their lives. Is there a difference? You have to fight for right. When something's wrong, people embrace it. It's in our nature. It's the way human beings are. The carnal mind. The carnal mind is enmity against God. Not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can be. That's the way we're made. So who's different? Those people who have been called of God and who've been given His Spirit. That's what's different. In 2 Timothy 2:11, Paul explains to us that we'll be sent or people will be sent, strong delusion. How's that going to happen? Well, something else we need to factor in. In the end time, Satan is going to know he has but a short time. And he's going to ramp it up and create as much chaos as he possibly can in interest of preserving himself, because he knows the end for him is coming. Now let's ask ourselves, which segment of world society will resonate with his vibes? That should be obvious. Chaos, fear, upheaval, distraction, contradictions, what we might call an engineered revolution. That's Satan's tactic. And he has his agents. Division serves the agenda. Divide and conquer. Conquer to rule. Satan's reaction is, if you don't win, destroy it all. That's what a spiritual war looks like. That's what we see going on. Religion, even in its secular state, counters the agenda somewhat. And that's why it will be suppressed. Especially the true religion. We know who's behind the scenes leading all of this in the world. 2 Corinthians 4 tells us, Satan is the god of this world, and he certainly is. It's not so much what's happening, like we see on the news, but what's behind what is happening. In Hosea 4, God tells us, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Hosea 4:6. There's going to come a time when religious people are going to realize the joke was on us. We weren't paying attention. We weren't doing what we should have been doing. There are a very few, who are going to be what we call the end-time martyrdom of saints. You can read about them in Revelations 6, 9 to 11. But one thing occurred to me. To be a martyr, you have to have some backbone. You have to be standing up to things. So many religious people have no backbone. Sorry to say. If you want to be a martyr, if you want to be in that honored group that Revelation 6 talks about, and God favors them highly, he's keeping their souls under the altar. That's an honored position. Not everybody is there, but just certain ones. Those who stood and died for the faith. The family, religion, right government, the means of governance, constitutional rights, the electoral process, the media, the free expression of thought, civil discourse, socio-political interactions, all of these are under attack. Satan knows he's got to bring down this country because it's a prime stabilizing world force. We're going to see political chaos like we wouldn't believe. 5 months ago, would we believe what's happening now, even if we were told? It all changes so fast. Don't think it's only about us. All the world is impacted by what's going on. We've heard from George in Kenya. far worse there as far as being restricted as to what they can do and where they can go and when. The world is being hurt right now. The world is being set up for chaos like we wouldn't believe. And the church, for the most part, is asleep. We identify this era as Laodicea. And it's not just the called out ones, but all. What does Laodicea mean? It's people who won't decide. God calls them to decide. That's what the term means. But we don't decide. In James 4, we're told to purify our hearts. We need to embrace the truth. We need to discern and expel things that aren't true. We might be among those more attentive. But sad to say, I believe we're woefully underaware. It's the ecclesia. It's God's true saints who are to be the primary focus in the end time. And that's where we read in Revelation 6 about the end time martyrdom of saints. There will be such a situation. It's hard to believe. But it will happen. There's a plan to destroy anything good, particularly freedom and liberty and justice. Don't think it's an accident. There's an old Irish proverb that says, don't worry, everything will be all right in the end. And if it's not all right, it's not the end.